it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by a friend of the show, James Palmer. He is the co-host of Scoop City Podcast on The Athletic. He also does fantastic work for Bleacher Report. James, happy to have you pop on today.
What's up, Kern? How you been, man?
Doing fantastic. We have been asking everybody this question this week. I have to ask you to kick things off today. What is the word that you struggle with spelling that spell check has to take over? My word is convenience. I asked Patrick Mahomes this question when he came on the show a couple of days ago. He said his word is itinerary. Everybody has that word. What's yours?
Available. And I don't know why. My fingers don't do it right when I'm typing. And it just fixes it for me. But for some reason, and I'm a pretty fast typer, but for some reason, my fingers don't do available correctly. And I'm watching it on the screen, and for one reason or another, it just doesn't work for me. And I just watch it get fixed every single day that I'm going, will he be available on Sunday? And it just gets fixed.
Who is your favorite fictional football player? Mine is Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights. Who is yours?
Well, listen, you know I'm Ohio State Buckeye, Karen. You know that. You know that's where I went to school. Do you know Keanu Reeves played a former Ohio State quarterback in two movies?
Oh, I knew of one. I didn't know the second one.
Which one did you know?
He's that in The Replacements, right?
Yes, and the same thing in Point Break with Patrick Swayze. Johnny Utah blew out my knee, lost my window. So he plays an Ohio State quarterback in two different movies. So I'll pick Point Break, though, as my favorite fictional football player. Even though he doesn't play football in it outside of a beach, he is a former bowl-winning quarterback, blew out his knee, didn't get an NFL career.
You know what? That absolutely counts. I would like to throw in this conversation Alvin Mack, another player who blew out his knee.
The program. Oh, just that's a top fiver for me right there. Yeah. Alvin Mack was absolutely outstanding running the middle of that defense.
I love the program. I'd be very happy to see that movie be a reboot. I don't know if that's one that could go to the theaters right now, but that could definitely go on Amazon Prime, and I'd watch it immediately.
I'd watch it, too. They had to take that scene out because kids started laying down on the highway. That was pretty brutal. That the original movie had the guys laying down on the highway to test their toughness, which was insane. I would say also that the program kind of just like made you just want to go out and just play football that day. There was just something about the program that was just kind of like, did they do it a little more real than everybody else? It was a great film.
So we were just talking about this right before you popped on. I was asked this question on an interview and I hadn't thought about it. When it comes to Sunday Night Football, are you more encouraged by the offense scoring 30 points or by the defense who held the Lions to 17 points?
I think it's by the defense, in all honesty, because that's where we have more question marks, and we've seen the way this offense has now worked with Xavier Worthy, which is what they wanted to do right from the start, but obviously the injury happens, and since he returned, they got, what, 30, 28, and 27 points. So that we've seen that, and we know what the secondary of the Lions was. But this was a Lions offense that we knew coming in, it was when they took the opening toss and said, hey, we want the ball, it was, okay, we want to run the football against a team that has struggled to stop the run. We had the two-headed monster, you know, with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. And they had a great opening drive, and they did some good things early. But the defense buckled down, man, and really played well against a Lions offense that had everybody. And so, to me, I have question marks on the defensive side of the ball, and I think playing the Lions the way they played them, I think that was a really good performance to me as this defense, I think, is going to grow as the season goes on, and I'm not saying anything that nobody's ever seen before with the Spags defense, but I do think this group is going to grow. They have some younger guys up front that they're going to need to have, you know, really go by leaps and bounds as this year goes on and be playing different football by December, but I think this was a really good step early on for that defense.
I argued the offense because I've seen their offense really improve at almost every single facet of it. Their quarterback is playing very consistent football, but that's always the case. Their running game, I think, has improved over the first 6 weeks of the season. That offensive line has certainly improved as well. You're getting great play from Travis Kelce, who had a very, I would say, weird first three games with the Andy Reid, the helmet throw, all of those things, and a wide receiver room that is really filled in and is now about to get their best wide receiver back. I've been very encouraged by this offense basically since halftime of Sunday Night Football against the Giants.
Yeah, listen, you asked me to pick one of the two. I'd say as an entire unit, I was impressed with the defense considering what they were going against. In terms of a position group that I'm most impressed with, to me, I think it's the offensive line. I think the offensive line coming together, and it's helped the run game. It's helped Patrick operate under center in the run game a little bit more than we've seen in the past. It helps him on the play action. It helps him on the bootlegs. And we know with Rashid coming back, like a lot of these shallow crosses that he's just brilliant at. And it's a feel thing, and he's just so good. And some of those plays take a little bit of time. And I think the offensive line allowing Patrick to be able to have some of these concepts that they want to run now that they're getting all of their pass catchers back, I think allows them to run the offense the way they want. And I think we had some question marks early on, right? We're like, there were thoughts that like Trey Smith wasn't playing up to the level that they know he can play at and the contract that he has. And we all know Creed's outstanding, but then you had another question at the other guard spot. And then, you know, the tackles, you're going, I don't know if this is kind of up and down. It was all starting to kind of come together, even though Josh Sims isn't there in that game Sunday night, you're still seeing this offensive line come together. And I think if that happens, and it looks like it's headed in that direction, I think this offense with Patrick getting time has a whole lot of different things that they can do.
Right now, we're talking to James Palmer, going through some of the top storylines right now with the Kansas City Chiefs. You are as plugged into Kansas City as any national reporter is. What are you hearing about Josh Simmons? What is sort of the feel around him as he is currently away from the team?
I'll just say, very few people knew what was going on, to my understanding, prior to Sunday. And then more people started finding out. And when you're hearing very little information coming out of the organization, oftentimes I also let that like kind of play itself out. And I think when you hear Andy say, I'm going to, you know, defer to Brett Veach, and you hear Patrick not really answer questions about him, I think, you start to just kind of go, well, let's just see what the team says next. Obviously, we're all digging and we're all asking questions. All of us, we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we weren't reporters, but I think there's a respect thing there. But I just think there's just not a lot of information. To be completely frank, there isn't. Until we get some, I think that's where it stands right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think my, at least, confusion in all of this has just been this. I don't know what it is. I have absolutely no clue, and I've tried to avoid speculation because I just don't think that's fair, and you and I both know somebody clips it or says they heard on the radio, like, wait, no, that's not at all what I said. What I'm confused about is this. I just don't know why, if it was a personal reason or a family reason, why either his agent doesn't release a statement or the Chiefs just jointly release a statement. Hey, Josh Simmons is away from the team right now dealing with a family matter. When Josh feels ready to talk about it, he'll give you an update. Like, that seems like something that's very simple that would have basically ended any rumor or people trying to guess what it is. I just don't know why they didn't put this fire out from the very, very beginning.
Yeah, I think that's a question more apt for somebody that studied PR in college and not me. But I agree with you. I think trying to figure out the best way to get as much information out as you're allowed to or willing to or can regarding the situation is oftentimes the approach with a lot of these things. But again, sometimes if you don't hear something, it's you don't have a lot and you as an organization don't want to speculate. So I'm going to kind of let it kind of play out a little bit. Obviously, we're all trying to figure out, you know, within reason and hope everything's okay. But at the same time, I think we just kind of see what the Chiefs do next.
I really want to make this a point in every person that we talk to this week. I think Jalen Moore just deserves a lot of credit. You follow this league. You talk to teams. You talk to players. I mean, I think a lot of players would have asked to just be on the inactive list on Sunday Night Football. He had a kid earlier in the day. You haven't been getting run with the ones. You haven't been practicing with the ones. You maybe were told in free agency one thing. A draft ended up happening, and it changed plans. I think it certainly would have been understandable for him to stay with his family on Sunday, for him to show up, play as well as he's played, keep his head down, and do the work. I think he deserves a lot of credit for how he's been a pro in the face of everything that's happened in the last 6 months.
100%. And I think he went from a good organization to another good organization. I think the time he spent at his previous stop plays a part in this, in the way that they do business, in the way that they run their football operation. And I think it's a credit to him for sure. And I think also it's we should be looking at this going, man, everybody was going, whoa, Brett Veach paid a lot of money here. Well, right now everybody's going around the league, is there anybody way we can get some offensive line help right now? Like, there are teams trying to get some depth. I mean, there's just not a lot of good offensive linemen around. There's teams that are very thin. I mean, you know, the Chargers are playing like their fifth, sixth offensive tackles, like, right now. And so credit to everyone involved for you know, maybe having one thought process when the deal was made, to pivoting and getting who many believe was maybe the most athletic tackle in the draft at the bottom of the first rounds. And he ends up playing really, really well while he's out there. And that changes things, and he wins the job. But I think, you know, he's been around long enough to go, this league changes week to week, and anything could happen. And you got to make the most of your opportunities. You're getting a chance to protect Patrick Mahomes. And he did a really, really good job of it. And so now, considering a very unique situation that they're in right now with Josh Simmons, I think Brett Veach is looking pretty smart, and he's looking like a pretty good fill-in right now.
Right now, we're going through some of the top storylines with James Palmer of Bleacher Report. I asked Mitch Holthus earlier this week what it means for the Chiefs to get back Rashee Rice, and he said this is like adding Deebo Samuel to an offense. We mentioned it a little bit earlier, just kind of talking about the Chiefs offense and how they're kind of rounding into form. I don't know if I would maybe go like Rashee Rice is the top 10, top 15 receiver in the league, but I think there's a group of like 30 to 35 wide receivers that are clear game-changing, impacting kind of players. And the fact that an offense that we think is trending up right now, the fact that they're getting a player like that at this time, I mean, that's one of the biggest additions that any team is going to have in the National Football League from now until the end of the season.
It's a big deal. I'd actually go a step further than Deebo, because very few years Debo's been the focal point of the offense, right? Like, he really hasn't been the focal point of an offense for some time. Rashee is Patrick's favorite target right now, I think. I mean, I think he's the focal point of the offense. I mean, obviously, he still loves throwing the ball to Travis, but we understand where he's at now in his career and the way this offense is operating with Rashee as the focal point, essentially, of it. I'll just tell you this. Very few times do you kind of talk to people in buildings and understand how excited they are for a player to come back. And this is, like, next level. Like, there are people in that building that are just over the moon to get Rashee back. And I think it's because they know the amount of attention he was going to get last year. Go look at his targets in four games before he got hurt, Carrington? I think it was something like that. And the amount of times Patrick looked his way and what they wanted to do with him and the growth they saw. You said he's not a top 10 receiver. They truly believe he's a top 10 receiver. That's the way the Chiefs think about him in terms of the way he can change a game. The yards after the catch, he's like a running back with the ball in his hand. So maybe that's where Mitch was going with the type of player that he can be. Because Deebo kind of is that same vein. But, like, he can take short gains and make them explosive plays. And this is a league right now that is starving for explosive plays. Outside of the Seahawks, it seems like, nobody can get really, really downfield. And now this group has the speed to stretch it. They make you cover every single blade of grass. I know it sounds cliche, but horizontally with the way Worthy plays, and now you're just stretched out. And I think Rashee Rice is kind of the linchpin that holds it all together in the way they want it to work and operate at its highest level. And so I do think this is a really big deal for an offense and a team that I think there's 13 teams with 4 or 5 wins. The Chiefs are not one of them, but I think most people would say the Chiefs are in a better spot than, if not, you know, the vast majority, if not all of those 13 teams.
I was just going to ask you that this is one of the rare times that I think you could say there's a team that is 3-3, and that you could argue that right now they're the best team in the National Football League. They're also currently have the 8th best record of teams in the AFC and are 3rd in their own division. I don't know if you've ever been able to say that at any point in the National Football League.
I think because right now you're seeing some of these teams at the top that you have legitimate questions. I mean, we could look at the AFC. Like, I think the Colts are playing outstanding football. It's one of the most efficient offenses we see in the league right now. It might be the most efficient offense we see. And I think everybody's going, well, like, that's Daniel Jones, right? Like, they still, even though DJ's playing at a really high level and they're really, really, you know, they're just a great group of skill guys that know what they're doing, and Tyler Warren's been awesome. You still go like, well, that's Daniel Jones. It's not Patrick Mahomes running it. And you see the Bills are having, for the second consecutive year now, like, issues attacking teams from the boundary and don't have an outside receiver, and that's really impacting their offense. And the defense has, you know, some injuries they're dealing with. Like, I do think it is true, because you also have a track record that's just in your mind. You have Andy Reid. You have Steve Spagnuolo. You have Patrick Mahomes. You still have all these pieces that have made it, you know, so consistent of a winning organization that gets better as seasons go on. You can't just forget that, even though every roster is different with every year and teams change. I get that. But a lot of these other teams have questions. I mean, the Chargers came out like gangbusters. And I mentioned, like, their entire backfield goes down. Most of their offensive line goes down. They lose Khalil Mack. Like, everybody has, I think, a question mark next to them, including the defending Super Bowl champs. I just think that question mark's just a little smaller, and we don't question it as much with Kansas City.
Are you a believer in the Indianapolis Colts?
You know what? I'll say this. I want to be, because it's kind of fun. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's kind of fun the way they play football. It's just people misuse the word balance, I think, with them. And you just go, oh, well, they're so balanced. They run the ball so well. I mean, Jonathan Taylor's leading the NFL in rushing. He's outstanding in everything he does. He's maybe one of the most underrated players over the last several years in this league. But they all know what they're supposed to do. I think it's such a great team to watch if you love, like, if you love everybody knowing their role. Like, Michael Pittman knows what he does. Josh Downs knows what he does. Tyler Warren is one of the most entertaining players to watch in football. And I think we love a redemption story. Like, we love that Daniel Jones is bouncing back. And I was, you know, guys still are rooting for him that played with him in New York. Saquon Barkley and Sterling Shepard, I was talking to him the other day. Like, they're all still pulling for him. I think this is somewhat legit. I really do. I think they are legit. And I think what we're seeing also is that Shane Steichen's a really good play caller. He was outstanding in Philadelphia before he got this head coaching job. He just didn't have anybody that could run the system. And now we're seeing, I think, a really balanced, efficient team that is, I think some people outside of Indy might be rooting for, just because it's a really great story for a lot of guys involved.
James, I'll get you out of here with two things. The first thing is, who do you think right now is the best team in the NFC? Because you just mentioned the question marks that are currently around the National Football League. You look at the NFC, I really like the way the Tampa Bay has started. They don't have a healthy wide receiver, it feels like, right now. The Lions are super banged up when it comes to their secondary. The Eagles just haven't felt right the entire season. Green Bay, I loved Green Bay to kick off the season. They lost to the Browns and then tied the Dallas Cowboys. There's so much uncertainty in the NFC right now. How are you handicapping in this thing? Who do you think is the best team right now?
Well, I love that you mentioned Tampa and what Baker's doing, because, I mean, not only is he playing, you know, without a future Hall of Famer and Mike Evans most of this season, the running mate of him and Chris Godwin has barely played, who's a Pro Bowl receiver as well. And then you have your rookie receiver carrying your entire passing game, and Emeka Buku is playing great, and then he's out. But nobody even talks about, like, Bucky Irving's been out. The entire offensive line returned from last year. They haven't played the way they played together last year for a single game. They've been shuffled around, and there's been injuries in front of Baker galore. I mean, most of those guys have missed multiple games this year. And if they did play every game, they probably played in multiple positions. So that's really what's going on in Tampa. So it's really impressive what they've been able to do and what Baker's been able to do. I'll bring up a team that you didn't mention. I think Seattle's really, really good. And mainly because they're good in the trenches, which to me is a significant part of being a great team. Their offensive line's playing really well. Cross is probably playing the best football of his career. Their interior three on their D-line might be as good as any interior three in all of football. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is right now playing like the best receiver out there. And Sam Darnold looks more comfortable in this system than he did playing with Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota last year. And so what Clint Kubiak's doing with that group and the way that they're designing that offense and the way that they're playing football right now on both sides, I think Seattle might be one of the best best teams in football. Secondary is a little bit of a question. We'll see what happens at the trade deadline, if they can add somebody and get things together. But I actually really like Seattle. They're a team that's been fun to watch, and they're pretty talented in the trenches. And to me, that usually carries you through ups and downs of the season.
I'm not sure if you have an MVP vote or not. We obviously got a long way to go in this thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about it between now and then. The point that I made whenever Mahomes became the favorite is I think the tie is going to go to Baker. I think we see this happen in the NBA with Jokic, for example. If it was a tie, because Jokic has won a couple, Joel Embiid wins it. If there's a tie, we're going to give it to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think the fact that Mahomes has won so many other things, and Baker is so likable and has such a very likable story. Like, it is the ultimate character arc. Number one overall pick, fell flat on his face, rebuilt himself, and turned himself into an MVP. I think if it is close in any way between Mahomes and Baker, then Baker's going to be the NFL MVP this season.
I can see that for sure. I think your thinking is definitely warranted, because I think it's part of the reason why Josh won the MVP last year over Lamar. Because I think if you look at Lamar Jackson's season, and I know people in Kansas City are like, you know, he can't win in the postseason, and you know, he can't beat Mahomes. Totally get it. It's a regular season award. And Lamar definitely put up the numbers to win another MVP last year. And it felt a little bit of what you're describing as, it's really close. Josh has never won one. He's always played great. Let's give it to him. It kind of had a little bit of the vibe to it with those two guys. It's been a minute since Pat won MVP, right? Like, I don't know. Like, if it is close, I do think that the idea of that story with Baker makes sense. I'll throw a monkey wrench in there. And I know this is a quarterback award. You know who I would give the MVP to right now? I give it to Bijan Robinson. Bijan Robinson is incredible right now. I think he's the best offensive player in football. He runs routes like a receiver. He's now finally getting used the way Arthur Smith, sadly he's not there anymore, but drafted him to do. It just took 3 years for Bijan to kind of learn it all. But the way that he plays the position, the offense runs entirely through him. Everybody knows he's getting the ball, and he's literally their second option after Drake London in the passing game. He plays their F, Karen. Like, he plays their slot on third down. Like, he is an unbelievable football player. I know nobody's won it since Adrian Peterson in 2012 as a non-quarterback, but I'd like to see maybe a non-quarterback get into the mix a little bit.
James, I'll get you out of here with this. I know you're a Big Ten guy. While you and I were talking, Indiana just agreed to a contract extension with their head coach. 8 years, $92.8 million for Kurt Cignetti to continue to be the head coach at Indiana. That is a fantastic contract.
I think it's outstanding, and I think there's a contract. You know, there's a vacancy within the Big Ten, and I think his name was on a list to potentially land in Happy Valley, and I think Indiana jumped at the chance to make sure they lock up, I think, somebody who's a really, really good coach. I think everybody's trying to chase down my Buckeyes right now, who are on fire, and I just think we all could wish that we could get Jeremiah Smith into the NFL next year, but we still have another year of college football for him, sadly. But, yeah, I think he's a great coach. I really do. And I think it's really awesome. It's one of the better stories in college football right now and what they're able to do there in Indiana.
That is James Palmer. He is with Scoop City Podcast, courtesy of The Athletic. He also does fantastic work for Bleacher Report. He's one of our favorite guests. James, I look forward to catching up with you in a month. The Chiefs have a stretch of at Buffalo, at Denver, Indianapolis, and Thanksgiving against the Cowboys. So I'm sure we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it sounds good. I think if Denver takes care of business, like if they can, they could be 8-2 rolling into that game against Kansas City, and that could be a really fun one.
Absolutely. That's James Palmer joining us on the show. Appreciate you, James.
Yep, no problem.
Absolutely. That's James Palmer joining us on the show. If you guys missed it, the breaking news right now, Kurt Cignetti, who is the head coach at Indiana, just signed an 8-year, $92 million deal to continue to be the head coach at Indiana. Let me tell you guys that our college football coverage here on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Bud Light. Bud Light and Tanners, they are teaming up to make every college game day legendary. Every Saturday, rep your college team, catch every play, and enjoy $15 buckets only at Kansas area Tanners locations. Bud Light, Tanners, from the stands to the bar, your game day headquarters. I mean, this seems very, very obvious to me. If you are Indiana, you have to know that other teams are going to try to come poach your coach at every single turn. Now, a major component of this, I think, when it comes to Indiana is their head coach is 64 years old. Now, I think if their head coach was 35 years old, I think we'd be having very different conversations. But this is Kurt Cignetti's first major coaching job. And if you've been a head coach, I looked this up. If you've been a head coach or in coaching since 1983 and you finally got to a Power Four and you're having the amount of success that he is having, I can understand why you want to stay. They took a chance on me when not a lot of other programs are willing to take a chance on me. And now they're willing to pay me what the market says that I'm worth. This makes him one of the 10 highest paid college football coaches. So, yes, he's not at Penn State. He's not at Nebraska or Florida or one of those. But he gets paid like he's there with a third of the expectation that they have. I understand that everybody wants to try to reach the highest of their profession. But, man, a lot of times the goal is to make really good money and be in a situation that you like. And if he feels like he's found that at Indiana, good for him. They just guaranteed him $92 million. You take care of yourself. You take care of your staff. You take care of the people that are around you. And you keep having success like he is right now at Indiana. What a job by them. I mean, they knew the vultures were swarming. Penn State made a phone call, or they at least called his agent to find out what the interest was. And if you want to avoid that conversation, you sign him to that kind of contract. He's now gotten two raises in less than a year. Very few people have raised their profile the way that Kurt Cignetti has as the head coach at Indiana. Coming up in just a little bit, I have a question to ask you guys about Josh Simmons and how we cover athletes. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, a show that prides itself on getting it right.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5, The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to kind of, I guess, get my thoughts out in real time and we can discuss them. Because I went home yesterday and I listened to certain parts of the show. And I was thinking back to texts that we were getting about Josh Simmons as the day was progressing. And I was trying to see things maybe in the perspective of people who have the opinion of, it's none of our business. When the Chiefs tell us, when they're ready to tell us, they will tell us that we shouldn't talk about it in the meantime. And then when I got here and I was planning on kind of going through this thought process with you guys, we then get an update from Nate Taylor about what could potentially be the situation with Josh Simmons.
I do believe it's a family matter. I do believe, you know, Josh Simmons is back in like the Southern California, San Diego area, which is, you know, his hometown. You know, I had the responsibility yesterday not to ask Andy Reid, because I've done that already, but to really ask Patrick Mahomes, like, hey, man, have you talked to this guy? Patrick was very honest on Sunday saying he didn't know where Josh was and that, you know, it's not every day the starting quarterback has to go to the coaching staff and say, where's the left tackle? And the coaching staff really doesn't have the best answer for your franchise quarterback. So, when Patrick Mahomes said yesterday that he's praying for Josh Simmons, I think we all need to take that cue from the quarterback. And, you know, I'm fearful, I guess, is probably the best way I can explain what I've heard.
This is, I guess, the thought process that I have when it comes to this. And this is directed to people, and I don't mean directed in like a negative sense, but I think this is directed to people that have the opinion of, why are you talking about this? We don't need to talk about this. When the Chiefs tell us, it's none of our business. I think we at least have to acknowledge that we discuss athletes and entertainers in a way that we don't really discuss really any other group of people. Give me a lot of professions where we openly discuss their salaries. Some of you have best friends that you've known for 10, 20 years. You have no clue how much money they make. You have no clue how much the other people at their job make. You can go on the internet right now and look up exactly how much Patrick Mahomes makes. You can do the math and figure out how much he gets paid every single paycheck. You can figure out when Patrick Mahomes is getting a bonus. You can read Patrick Mahomes' contract if you wanted to online. That is a very unique situation, something that I would say is extremely personal in a lot of ways that has been made public information. I would say when it comes to family things, we discuss the relatives and family members of these people all the time. Just think about Mahomes, and maybe he is an unfair example, somebody who has been in the public eye now for a decade versus somebody who just got into the National Football League. You know Patrick Mahomes' mom, dad, brother, sister, wife, kids, dogs. We know a whole lot about Patrick Mahomes' personal life and talk to him about his personal life. Same thing for Travis Kelce. You basically are a member of the Kelce family now at this point. So I think at least in this conversation, I think we at least have to acknowledge this one part, that the line is very much blurred in what is private and what is public when things that are usually private for 99% of people, at least when it comes to them, is a very, very public thing. Tell me other professions where we openly talk about if they should be fired or not. We do that with professional athletes. We do that with coaches. I mean, you guys have fired Matt Nagy 6 times and it's week 7 of the NFL season. We openly talk about when players should be traded. We openly talk about when players' contracts should be voided. They signed a deal with their employer and we look at when they could potentially be let go by their employer. Again, I understand that it's sports, so we look at it through a very different lens. And I understand that this is a potentially very serious family matter. I don't know what it is, but I do think for people who are very curious to know what is exactly going on with Josh Simmons, I do think it is a little bit unique where we are so involved in their personal life and we discuss their personal life ad nauseum. I mean, half of the job is talking about their personal life. It's not always talking about the games. Some of it is this thing happened off the field. How does it affect you at work? So I think it's hard, I think, to remove yourself from we talk about so many facets of their job to now when it comes to why are you not at work? Oh, wait, that's too personal. I don't know what it is with Josh Simmons. I have absolutely no clue. I don't know if we're ever going to find out exactly what it could potentially be, or maybe he decides to tell us. But I do think it is in people's normal curiosity and how we discuss athletes to want to try to find out the truth on why he is right now not with the team.
I think that's fair to point out that fans have a little bit of blurred lines when it comes to player privacy. And I, when it comes to Josh Simmons, I put this on social media. I honestly, at this point, don't need to know the why with why he's missing or not with the team. I just want to know a timetable and some clarity from the team on if they seem to know. They just kind of are burying their head in the sand saying it's a personal matter and trying to get the media to go away. But you're right. The text line, whenever we talk about Tyreek Hill, loves to talk about his divorces, his wife, the wife he has, the women he's dated, the children. They talk about Tyreek Hill's life. That's the text line. And then we turn around and talk about, hey, this player is missing from the facility. He's not at work. It's personal issues. And the text line then turns around and tells us, you guys need to be quiet. It's a personal issue. Well, you can't have both ways to me. So, and I'm definitely painting with a broad brush when it comes to the text line. But if you're the type of person who has texted in or gotten a joke off on social media about player X and their personal life, you can't turn around and head to social media or the text line, hey, we just need to be quiet and respect this man's privacy. It can't be both ways. And so, to your point, the lines are blurred with fans and what is and out of bounds with personal lives of athletes. And I think right now, because the Chiefs are basically telling us nothing, fans have taken a stance of that's fine. When sometimes the Chiefs or any organization tells us nothing and it's not fine. It just, it's very much a moving goalpost.
Yeah, and I think here, though, someone just said, how many times or ways do they need to tell you the same thing? I think, at least for me, I think there are people trying to pry in and trying to figure it out. I mean, Rob, you and I work in this. There are definitely rumors about this. I'm just not really interested in sharing the, oh, I heard this. Oh, I heard this. I think even when it comes to Nate, and you guys know, I love Nate. Nate has reported 2 different things when it comes to Josh Simmons. When this first started, it was related to an illness. That was the Monday Night Football game. So it was related to an illness. Then it became a family matter. in the situation. So even with Nate Taylor, who I think is as plugged in as anybody, Nate's story doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me when it comes to all of this. So I think when it comes to how many times they need to tell you the same thing, I guess the answer for me would be until I feel like they're giving us information and or the truth. And that's why I said from the very, very beginning, I just don't know why they just didn't release a statement from the beginning. Josh Simmons is repped by what's the guy's name?
Drew Rosenhaus.
My bad. I just like I had it, then I lost it. I lost it right there. On the top of my head, I lost it.
I thought you paused for dramatic effect.
No, I lost it. I was thinking and I lost it. He's repped by Drew Rosenhaus. Like literally one of the best sports agents you can possibly have. If there is anybody that had that knows how to deal with PR, it's Drew Rosenhaus. Drew Rosenhaus has been Tyreek Hill's agent from day one. So there, we know he knows how to deal with PR. Why didn't they release a statement from the very, very beginning? That's it. That's all they had to do. Some of this, I just think, could have very easily been avoided. I really think it could have very easily been avoided. I tell you guys, PR in 2025 is honestly one of the easiest things that you can possibly do. You might scream about cancel culture. We all know in 2025, the things that you can't say and could potentially get you canceled. I could have told you that if you're secretive about why a player is not playing, it's going to inquire for everybody to try to figure out what's going on. Release a statement from the very, very beginning. That's all you had to do. Josh Simmons is dealing with a very serious personal matter. When he feels comfortable to tell us that, he will tell us that. All you had to do was release a statement from the very, very beginning, and we could have just avoided this conversation when it came to Joshua Simmons. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with CDOT. Tune in as Nate Taylor of ESPN joins the show in studio every Friday at 4 on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan. The Drive, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I don't know if this counts as speculation or not. I certainly don't mean for it to be the case, because this one gentleman is very upset about this. And he sent in, Carrington, what does it matter? He's not on the team. It doesn't matter what the reason is. What more do you guys want? This is one of the reasons why I think this is so important. And I think it's just intellectually dishonest to act like his absence doesn't mean anything. Again, maybe this is hypothesizing, and I don't mean to do that. I'm not throwing this out there. What if Josh Simmons on Sunday woke up and decided, I don't want to play football anymore? What if that happened? Don't know if it happened, not saying that it did happen. What if that's what happened? What if Josh Simmons on Sunday woke up and said, you know what, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I need to go home. How do you put that guy back on your football team? That's a legitimate question to ask, is it not? If you on the day of a game just woke up one day and decided, I don't want to play football anymore, you don't really have one of those jobs that you can just up and leave like that.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Right? So that's what I'm saying is like the why he is gone matters to me, at least, on why it is. If it's a family matter and we end up finding that out, that his mom is sick and you were gone for 2 weeks to take care of your mom, then great. Everybody would have done that in that situation. Man, you found out your mom got breast cancer, you're gone, you're out for 2 weeks, and that's why you were gone. If you want to tell us that, it's perfectly fine. But I think what has happened with Josh Simmons is their secrecy around things has led people to assume a lot of different things. Rob, you and I know this. I've heard like 5 different reasons, both on the air and off the air, of why Josh Simmons isn't on the team. Some of them are little things. Some of them are potentially serious things about what, like, so that's what I'm saying is for us to act like this is normal, I think is being dishonest. There is not another situation like this currently in the National Football League where an impactful player, I don't think we'd be having this conversation if it was Derek Nnadi, for example. I mean, I'd like to know where Derek Nnadi is, but I don't think we'd be having this conversation. Josh Simmons, if we are like doing a draft of for the future, who are the most important players on the Kansas City Chiefs, he might be second. If Mahomes is one, and we all agree that the quarterback is number one, if you are doing a, hey, this player currently on the team is an all-pro caliber player in 2028, who would you pick for it to be? I think the next answer is Josh Simmons. And if you're going to tell me that you have an all-pro left tackle for your 33-year-old quarterback, that is a significant advantage. So I do think, like, acting like him not being here isn't that big of a deal. Well, I don't know if it's a big deal or not because I don't know why he's not here. So I can't really give you an opinion on how much it matters or doesn't matter if I don't have the answer to the question.
And we see this largely the same way. Where me and you just differ a little bit is one day we will find out the why. I'm not so pressed for the why right now. It seems like their answers after their lack of clarity on the why have confused me. Because what Andy Reid said Sunday versus what Andy Reid said Wednesday aren't the same. He was asked a very clear question on Monday by Nate Taylor during his Zoom press conference. Hey, do you have a timetable on Josh Simmons and his return? He didn't really have an answer. Now, maybe the team inside the organization knows that answer, but the fact that it's not known why he's missing, you haven't communicated a timeline to us, and then I truly believe Andy Reid was just saying this as a defense mechanism, but it opens up a new wave of questions. When he said on Wednesday, I don't have any comment on that, Brett Veach is handling it. What do you mean Brett Veach is handling it? What is Brett Veach handling? What is there a roster move coming? Is he going to be put on the non-football injury list? Like, what is it only creates another set on wave of speculation. So I feel like me and you differ a little bit. I'd like to know the why. And I feel like if we knew the why, a lot of these questions would resolve themselves. But since we don't, they haven't answered any of the questions after that well. And it has been PR disaster 101. They've only opened themselves up to more speculation, more rumors, more hearsay, more innuendo, any of those things, because they just haven't communicated a clear timetable or messaging since it happened.
Yeah, and I mean, the text line is just pushing back. They don't have to communicate the timeline to you guys. Oh, all right, if you guys want to move on, that's perfectly fine with me.
I don't want to argue the text line all day.
Yeah, no, but
if they said 3 weeks versus they said 8 weeks, it's a very different thing for the team and covering the team. Like, not knowing the timeline means this conversation happens every week. If they just said, we think it's going to be 3 or 4 weeks, cool. If they think it's going to be 6 or 8, cool. But TBD is just an odd answer to me.
Yeah, I guess I also think, and I agree with this, and I swear you can move on after this, like, this is something that I think you can only get away with in a Midwest market. If Josh Simmons was on the Giants or on the Cowboys and did this, it would be the number one. It'd be the number one story on First Take. If Josh Simmons was on the Dallas Cowboys and just left on Sunday, it'd be the number one story. Where is he? Why is he not here? It'd be a major, major deal if that was the case. Let's play this for you guys. This was Matt Rhule. He was on the Pat McAfee show talking about the impact of the college football playoff.
Let's just play it all out. Like, that's why the NFL, like, you're not voting on who's going to make the playoffs in week 6. You're just watching them and letting the games play out. And forever, college football has been an elimination tournament. Win once and you're out. And we got the playoff. And so now you can have good matchups and good games. And you lose a game, you can fight back. Like, last year we were talking about 9-3 teams getting in, which I think is great. Because now you can go play good games, have excitement throughout the year, and then have a lot to talk about the last 3 weeks of the season.
I will say this, and this is one thing that, like, in hindsight, I was just wrong about when it came to the college football playoff. I do think I was right that all they've done is just really reconfigure the bowl system. Like, players told you we don't want to play in these bowls, and now you made those bowls part of the playoff, and now it ends up mattering. I do think that it has measured success in a very different way than we had with the 4-team playoff. Like, back when we had the BCS bowl games, for example, for Kansas, yes, Kansas didn't compete for the national championship, but going to the Orange Bowl and winning the Orange Bowl is a tremendous accomplishment. That, yes, they were not close to winning the national championship, but you got to leave with something. I do think that the inclusion of the playoff has now made it a point where, man, the goal isn't to make the college football playoff. Let's be realistic here. I don't think Indiana can win the national championship. I mean, it'd be great if they won the national championship, but I'm at least be realistic and assume that Indiana can't win the national championship. If Indiana makes it again and wins a game in the college football playoff, that is one of the most tremendous accomplishments in the history of college football. People will not look at it that way. But the fact that Indiana, who had never won at least 9 games in a college football season in back-to-back years, outright earned it, not something fluky, earned it on the field, went to the college football playoff, went on the road last year, turn around. We look like they could host the game or even have a bye in the college football playoff and then be in a position to win and potentially go on a run. It will be one of the greatest stories in the history of the sport. This kind of stuff just doesn't happen. So I think when you factor in all of the changes that you have in the sport, you have name, image, and likeness, you have the transfer portal, and now that there are so many different pathways to you being included in the college football playoff, where now 12 teams can make it, and we're possibly talking about 16 teams making it, I think when you start to have that level of interest in it, and now it just spreads things out. Now Missouri thinks they have a shot. Ole Miss has a shot. Texas A&M has a shot. That you have spread things out. I do think I was so focused on who wins the tournament ultimately, and I do still think that that is a small number of it. I think more than anything, it has now become, well, who can be included in the tournament? And now you've opened that up to 50 or 60 teams, and that's really the race. That's really the value right now of the sport. Coming up on the other side, today is a very important anniversary in sports. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.